Baruch Hashem, we started learning last week some of the Torahs of the Rebbe Rabbeinu from Kosciuszko, and fortunately, there has been a considerable amount of work going on over the last 15-20 years, the gathering the Rebbe Rabbeinu's Torahs from different places, different Sfarim, different Talmidim. As I said, we don't really have a sefer that he wrote. We have bits and pieces that are found in the writings of other Talmidim and that have also been handed down from generation to generation in an oral tradition. So I wanted to spend some time again learning the Inyan of Emes. We began last week, so let's begin at where it says on page Kuf Yudal, that page Kuf Yudal Kuf Tesvav. Are you getting the phone thing here?
Yeah.
I feel good.
Listen, these other guys are
you're right. I didn't know how to
hedge it on this.
You're right. No, you know. I didn't know how to do it. I should have learned how to do it. Okay. So it says Ois Beis. Now, there's a basic teaching here from the Rebbe Rabbeinu that we see is being used in a number of ways by Talmidim of his. Now, this statement of the Chayza of the Sir of Lublin is a little bit shocking when you first hear it, and we have to see how the Rebbe Rabbeinu explains it. Shomar, the Rebbe from Lublin, the Chayza said, "Shu oyhev Yoiser as harasha shu hu yadeh shu harasha." The Chayza from Lublin said that he has greater love for a rasha, for a wicked person who at least knows that he's wicked, mit tzadik shu yadeh shu hu tzadik. He loves the rasha who knows he's a rasha more than the tzadik who knows he's a tzadik. So we're thinking, how could that be such a thing? So he would say, Rosh is a Rosh, that he knows it, Yashakoyach. That the tzaddik knows he's a tzaddik. So he would say, so he's not humble. There's something missing in his humility. But the Chayitz Rublin said that he loves a Rosh who knows he's a Rosh more than a tzaddik who knows he's a tzaddik. How could that be?
Thank you for calling the conference.
So,
after the town.
So the Shaul, HaRebbe Rabbunim, Susi Agenlun, was a Chayitzah. So the Rebbe Rabbunim asked the Sir of Lublin, Loim lo tam al kach. What's the reason for this? Why are you saying this?
Because
and he answered,
willing and teachable. So you write what you want out of.
That's all right. It's okay. So he answered, Veheshev lo, ki harosha shu hu yodeh shu hu rosha. The rosha who knows he's a rosha is dovuk be'emes. So Rebbe Bunim says that at least the rosha who knows that he's a rosha, and he acknowledges that, and he's not deluding himself. On some level, he's attached to that quality, that's the most important quality, which is the seal of Hashem, which is Emes, which is truth. V'kadosh Baruch Hu Emes, v'nikra Emes. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Emes. There's very little that we could say that we understand. Certainly we speak about the Midas of Hashem. There's very little that we could understand. But the Svarim HaKadoshim tell us that of all the Midas, that which we could try to identify with most is the Midas HaEmes. Chayitzim HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emes means that this is the quality kivyochel of Hashem that is the essence of how Hashem is revealed in this world. So the Rasha who knows he's a Rasha is Dovik Banis. He's at least attached to the truth. Bakash Baruch Hu Emes v'nikra Emes. Aval HaTzadik, however, the Tzadik, Shemam and Ba'atma Shehu Tzadik, the Tzadik who sees himself as being a Tzadik, Aval HaTzadik, Shemam and Ba'atma Shehu Tzadik, Bevadei Ein HaDavar Kein. That's the pshat. He certainly is not a Tzadik. So if any of us here have thought that we're Tzadikim, that's assuming that we're not, right? He said, then Zvadei Zeno came. Ke ein tzadik barta sheyasa toiv le'echta. Doesn't mean that he's not an elochiyid, doesn't mean he's not a good Jew. But a tzadik means that there's a person who sees himself as faultless, who who sees himself as being perfect, who sees himself, let's just finish the Torah, who sees himself as being mamish without a blemish. So the Rebbe Abunim says that there's no such thing, because there's no tzaddik in the world who hasn't sinned. So what's happening here is that the Rasha, who knows he's a Rasha, so he's connected to the truth. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves the truth. Whereas the person who's deluding himself to thinking that he's a tzaddik, he's connected to the world of Shaker, and as a result of that, he's detached from Hashem. Which doesn't mean to say, I understand this can be very confusing. Does that mean that a guy's a Mechal Shabbos, he eats treif, he speaks Lashon Hara, he's a Megala Arayis Befer Hesti, and he does every Aveir he can think of, but he's honest about it. I mean, he knows he's a Rasha. It doesn't mean he's a God forbid on a higher level. The Rebbe's not saying that he's on a higher level of the Chayes. It can't be. Certainly it can't be. But I'll tell you there's a story from the Chayes from Blin I once said here, and it's something that reminds us of this Torah, that there was once by the Chayes, there was the Chayes used to be always hundreds and hundreds of people waiting to see him. And it once happened, there was a very, very coarse and disgusting person who pushed his way through, and he barged into the room, and he started talking loud to the Rebbe in a very coarse way, and the Rebbe gave him a tremendous baruch haba, the chayzer gave him a tremendous welcome. And even the chassidim were initially very upset about this whole thing, but they assumed that it must be that he's one of the hidden tzaddikim, because he spoke in such a crazy way, and the way he acted was so inappropriate. So they assumed it must be that he's one of the hidden tzaddikim. The Chayzer had, in Yonim had things with his hidden tzaddikim, the 36 hidden tzaddikim. And the way that the Rebbe greeted him and then took him into the room in front of everybody. So afterwards, when he left, so the chassidim ran over to the Chayzer and they said, Rebbe, was that one of the 36 tzaddikim? He said, him? A tzaddik? What are you talking about? He's a Rasha Marusha. He's a Rasha, that guy. So how come the Rebbe let him right in? The Rebbe was so happy to see him. So the Chayzer said, I'll tell you the truth. When Jews come to me, they're always tzibrochen. They're always broken. Why? What's the main reason they're broken? Because they come to talk to me about their aveiras. They did aveiras, and because of that, they're totally broken. Because Jews are good, and it hurts them when they do something that's wrong, they feel guilty. This Yid, I have to tell you something. He's such a manuvel. He's such a lowlife. He doesn't have the slightest guilty feeling when he comes to me. So it's such a machai to be with him. Because he's completely besimcha. He just enjoys what he does. Everybody else is sebrochen that comes to me. This guy is mamish besimcha. He's completely happy with his life. So, does that mean that what was the Chayzer was saying, God forbid, that he's on a high madrega? No, it doesn't mean that. And the same thing here. The Rasha is a Rasha. He knows he's a Rasha. That's the beginning of finding one's way back. At least he's not deluding himself. But the Rebbe was very worried. This is just a strong, sharp way. It's a sharp way of saying that when it comes to the person who thinks he's a tzaddik, so Mimela, if he thinks he's a tzaddik, so he's deluding himself because none of us are perfect. And therefore, even though at this point in his life, it might be that he's closer to God, but the potential here is much less. The potential is less. One is heading towards, the other is heading away. It's true that the tzaddik is closer, and the rush is far away. But the rush is moving in a certain direction, hopefully, and the tzaddik is living with a delusion. And living in a delusion, living in a mistake, is sheker. And sheker, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't stand sheker.
Why is the tzaddik living in a delusion? Because he didn't see this particular variant? And he's a tzaddik.
Right,
saying,
right. Because the Rebbe says that tzaddik shamar matzmushu tzaddik. What does it mean? It means that he thinks that he's perfect. He thinks that he's perfect. He thinks that he has nothing to improve. He has nothing to change.
Still, get tzaddik and be aware of a particular area. One area takes away the tzidkus.
No, it wouldn't take away the tzidkus if he admitted it. What the Rebbe is explaining is that this tzaddik is not admitting that he has this fault. That's the problem. He sees himself as an Adam Hasholem. He's perfect. He sees himself as someone who was perfect. That's what the Rebbe meant when he said that tzaddik who thinks he's a tzaddik. He doesn't mean the Chavetz Chaim. Chavetz Chaim is always crying that he wasn't a tzaddik, right? Rabbi Moshe Feinstein always held he wasn't a tzaddik. This person feels very comfortable and holds himself to be a tzaddik. He holds himself to be a tzaddik. So Akash Baruch Hu has low tolerance for liars.
Tzaddik in Peltz?
I don't know if he's a tzaddik in Peltz. I'm not saying he's a faker, he's a hypocrite. He's an Eilech Yid, except he thinks too highly of himself. And because of that, he's deluding himself. He's deluding himself. And that delusion is Sheker. And Sheker is something that Hashem detests more than anything else. At least that Rasha, he admits that he's a Rasha. He knows these are his faults. And he's not claiming to be anything other than he is. So, it doesn't mean Hashem is attached to him, but Hashem is kivyachol seeking him out. Whereas the one who's a tzaddik, who holds himself to be a tzaddik, and sees himself as being perfect, so Hashem detests delusion and falsehood. That's what the Rebbe is saying.
On the other hand, Rabbi Nachman talks a lot about the tzaddik. The world exists, you have to cling to the tzaddik.
Now, yeah.
He talks about the tzaddik.
Yeah, it's not that. This is not the tzaddik.
No, but even so, then you have also what's called false humility. The guy feels, who am I? I'm not a tzaddik. He won't leave thousands. Even if the chosid will win, why didn't he agree to see so many people? Because he knew he was worthy to see them.
Correct.
And he would say, no, I'm not me, I'm a Benoni.
Right.
So he would never accept the Siddur. He wouldn't give up the Hasidic movement that he did.
Right.
So there is an Indian that they do have to recognize who they are.
100%.
Also, MS.
Right. Shmuel, you're 100% right. There's no question that a nova psula, false humility, or inaccurate humility, is terribly destructive. Moshe Rabbeinu would never have received the Torah. Even though Moshe Rabbeinu was described as being the most humble person on the earth, nevertheless, Moshe Rabbeinu felt himself worthy to receive the Torah. Not only did he feel himself worthy to receive the Torah, but he said to Hashem that if you don't forgive them, then you could erase my name from your book. I would never say such a thing, because I figured like Hashem's book would be fine without my name, you know what I'm saying? So Moshe Rabbeinu obviously felt that the show's not going on without him. So there's no question that the tzaddik has to recognize his kaiches, and he has to know his kaiches, and he has to use his kaiches. On the other hand, the tzaddik has to recognize, and the tzaddik does recognize, his shortcomings. He does. And he's constantly working to improve himself and to change and to grow. And when he does that, he inspires other people. He brings them closer. So there's no question that what you're saying is right, and that Hashem has very little use for a tzaddik who doesn't know that he's a tzaddik. But here's the difference. This person sees himself as being b'shleimus. And Rabbi Nachman and the Baal HaTanya and those tzaddikim that you mentioned, who were the most exalted human beings, they saw themselves as constantly in need of change, constantly improving. Every day was a new day, and every day they would start again and make themselves once again look for the truth. And that relentless person has stopped searching for the truth. He's no longer interested in the truth. In other words, he's come to rest upon his laurels. He's come to accept himself as fitting into a certain category, and that once he has reached that part, that place, he's gotten his membership, and he now belongs to the tzaddikim club, and that's it. You know, he's done. So that's what the Chayzer says, that the Kadosh Baruch Hu is far from such a person because he's not honest. And dishonesty is something that Hashem can't tolerate. So those tzaddikim were very honest. He'll talk about that a little bit on the bottom. We'll see another Torah on that in a minute. So that's what he explains now. Ubezeh pirish harebi abunim as apostle ki loy bizev loy shikets anus ani. Afiluk shehu be'emes ani. Means that Hashem is never turns away and is never disgusted with what? With the requests or with the outcry of the one who is poor. Afiluk shehu be'emes ani, even if he's really poor. Vein ani el bedaz. And what is poverty? The different types of poverty. There's poverty in the simplest sense, which is financial poverty. On the other hand, Chazal say that the true ani, the poorest man, is the one who's lacking das, who's lacking wisdom. That's the true ani. So the Rebbe Bunim explained that when it says in the pasuk, the David HaMelech said that Hashem never turns away from the cry of the ani, of the poor man, it means even a person who's poor in deeds, even a person who's poor in wisdom. Lefishu Dovik Bemis. But the point is, that he is the first to admit that he's an ani. He knows that he's poor. And he says he's poor. He knows that he's poor. And Hashem is always ready to receive a person who's honest. Afiluk shebemes ani. Vein ani levadas. Lefishu dovik bemes. Because he's attached to the truth. Vemes HaKadosh Baruch Hu ohev. Just like the Rebbe, the Seer from Lublin said, what can I do? I love happiness. I love to see a person's besimcha. So Hashem loves when there's a Jew who's telling the truth. Even if he has many, many faults. Again, that doesn't mean he's going to Olam Haba, and it doesn't mean that everything is fine. He doesn't have to do tshuva. Please don't misunderstand. The guy has to do tshuva. He has to change his life. There's no question about it. But when Hashem sees that when there's a Jew who's be'emes, who's honest, and this is something which became in Kotsk and in Ger, this is that they took from the Chayzin, they took from the Rebbe Bunim, this is the aside of the whole chassidus of Pshischa, is emes. And the emes, when a person's emesdik, then he has tremendous yaita d'shma, he has tremendous help from above. Because Hashem loves the emes. But the tzaddik who feels, ach, I'm a tzaddik, meaning I don't have anything to change, I have nothing to improve. As it says in the Zohar, man di ihu rav, ihu zeher. It says in the Zohar that the one who thinks that he's great is really small. The one who is great is tight. The one who thinks that he's great is really nothing. Why? Because this person is attached to falsehood. V'sheker sani Hashem zbar, and falsehood Hashem despises. So you know that when you're growing up, like I remember, I once shared this with you here in the shul that you know when you're in yeshiva, so the feeling that I had was that you know growing up and I was in the shiur, you know, so I was you know I was all right, I did well in the shiur. So you know you look at yourself if compared to the other guys in the shiur, if you're doing well. So you see, you know, this must be a big Talmud Chacham, you know, because I could read the Rashi, and the guy next to me is not reading the Rashi. So you look at yourself a certain way. And then finally, at some point in life, when you're really amongst Talmud Chachamim, real Talmud Chacham, not comparing yourself to the person next door, and you realize that you've been deluding yourself all along, that Imamish, you're nothing. You're absolutely nothing. You know nothing. You're absolutely nothing. So at that moment, there's a horrible feeling. I remember exactly when I felt that. I remember the moment in my life when I felt that, when I was in the yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, and it hit me in a very, very strong way. When I realized that I mamish was a complete amharis.
You were the guy next door.
Huh?
You were the guy next door.
Yeah, right. That's right. So I remember that moment, and it's a very, very bad feeling. It's a very uncomfortable feeling. But you think at that moment that you're the lowest person in the world. But in Hashem's eyes, it could be the first time you've ever really been attached to Him. It's the first time He looks, now you finally, you're a person that's emesdik. You're honest. You're truthful. You're looking for the truth. You're not stam trying to, you know, measure yourself by standards that you should not measure yourself by. You're being emesdik. You're being truthful. So He says that, v'alma mari v'rabizal, Shesvaras Rebbein Lublinskusik, who's Kesvaras Aranzal, Bahalochis Adkan Dvarv, doesn't say what that was referring to, but the Rebbe Abunim said that this teaching of the Rebbe from Lublin is a teaching that is found in the Ran. He doesn't say where, so I don't know what that's referring to. Pamachas, one time. Lacha Rosh Hashanah, after Rosh Hashanah, Kshapota Ha Rebbe Abunim Zatzal, as Ha'olam Anshe Shlomai, Lebeisam L'Sholom, it was after Rosh Hashanah, I guess after Marv, the second day of Rosh Hashanah, and the Rebbe Bunim was saying goodbye to all the Chassidim. He was sending them home. Amar l'kol echad v'echad. He said to each of the Chassidim as they passed by. Each one came by, and the Rebbe said to him a good vach, a good yor, a gemach simetayv. So when they passed by, the Rebbe Bunim said to each one, and Yisholom imcha dover echad, I'm asking of you one thing. But I want you to promise that you'll listen to me, that you'll obey what that you'll fulfill the one request that I have of you. Who would say to the tzaddik right after Marv Rosh Hashanah? No. So every single person passed by the Rebbe, and the Rebbe said, I'm asking you one thing, and I want you to listen to me. Promise me you'll listen. So each person said, yes. So what did he say? As Omaloi, Shemavaki Shemanashaloy Yamashekir Ki Yamamis. I'm asking you not to say anything that's false, to only be true, to only say the truth.
Yeah,
huh?
Because they're different
madrigas. You know, there's something that's not a lie, but it's also not true. We're gonna talk more about that. There's something that's not a lie. It's not sheker, but it's not the whole story. It's not the emes. You know, in life, even people like us can understand sometimes that distinction. That's what it's all about, right? It's omission. You know, so you don't say the whole truth and nothing but the truth. It's not sheker, but it's also not. There's something in between. So the Rebbe Bunim said, I'm asking you one thing, and I want you to promise me. He says to tell the truth. And he said that to every single one that went by. Every single one. They should have asked the guys coming out, what, you know, what happened. Then you could run away, right? But everybody wanted to get a bracha from the tzaddik also. So he says, Vagam shedvarim halalu kol meivin bin yovin. He says, anybody with intelligence, what's so deep? What's the big deal? He says, to tell the truth. What do you mean? We're supposed to tell the truth. He says, Natarina, you're not allowed to lie. What do you mean? He says, but this is really, truthfully, this is very deep. So one of the greatest disciples of the Rebbe Bunim was Rabbi Yitzchak from Vorka. So once it was Purim, and Rabbi Yitzchak Vorka said to the Chassidim, Bo v'alamedchem darche Chassidus. Come, I want to teach you the true path of Chassidus. So that right away, everybody gets excited, right? So figures are going to be a new style of Bekesha, bigger gartel, you know, who knows what, the real way of Chassidus. Right? That's what everybody likes to hear. Bo v'alamedchem, or maybe to hear something about another Rebbe, something against another Rebbe, right? Something good. So what happens? So everybody pushed to hear what Rabbi Yitzchak Vorka was saying. I'm going to teach you the Darche Chassidus. He said, any person, any Jew who deludes himself, who tricks and fools himself, even in one thing of his life, he's going away from everything in life. He's going away from the whole thing. And this is the secret of secrets. Because b'seif chassidim, shadeze naase echad bal tshuva. Then how does a person become a bal tshuva? Ideze sha'omalei sheyishma piv misheke. What's the source of this? So it seems that there's a very early source that goes all the way back to the seif chassidim, to the early middle from Yehuda Chassid, from the time of the Baalei Taisvus. Rabbi Yehuda Chassid said that there was a person who he changed, who he was able to influence the becoming of Balshuva. How? He just said, Sheyishma piv misheke. Just don't say anything that's not true. What does that mean? Don't say anything that's not true. There are so many things in a day that we say that's not lies. It's coming back to what you said, Rebbe, man. That's not lies, but we've never really even looked into or thought about or tried to understand or tried to work through that should be emes, mamish emes. When the Rebbe Abunim said to the Chassidim, tell the truth, and he said that after Rosh Hashanah, he was trying to help them do tshuva. When he was trying to help them do tshuva, that says some tshuvas right after Rosh Hashanah. And when he said, speak the truth, say words that are true, don't say anything that's false, because he knows, the Rebbe Abunim, that the truth of truths of a Jew is always going to be what? Torah mitzvahs. The only thing that takes us away from being the people that we need to be is that we're not being honest. We're not being honest. But if you're 100% honest, so then you'll come to do tshuva. Dishonesty, again, here it doesn't mean lying. It means not the emes la'amita. To come to that deep, to the emes within yourself. But once a person is attached to the emes, again, you could be living in an environment and be brought up in a home where you simply have not been exposed to any of it. You don't know what's going on. But, you know, according to the Rishonim, many Rishonim, that even if you are a person that is living in a place where there are Jews who are observant Jews, even though you were raised in a completely non-observant home, if you're living where there are observant Jews, you can no longer be called halachically a tinuk shenishba, like a baby who was raised without anything. If you even saw once, and it's found in the Ran, in the Mugei Yosef, even if you saw once a frum Jew, a religious Jew. If you're a Jew and you saw that once, you should be wondering and asking and seeking to know and to understand if you're amizdik, if you're truthful, like why, what is this? What's this about? If a person never saw and he was brought up in the jungle, or he never saw, no, but if a person even saw once a Jew who's shomer Torah mitzvahs, so the midas amis would bring him to the truth of what? It would bring him to that truth that this is the only way for a Jew to live, that this is the truth of tshuva. It's hard for us to understand. We're not in that madrega. But that's how the Rebbe Abunim wanted to bring the Chassidim to this madrega of truth, to this madrega of tshuva, to do tshuva, by saying, are you going to say the emes? Speak only the emes, only the truth. If we would try doing that for a few hours a day, not to say anything that's not completely who you are, that doesn't mean like, you know, you see somebody say, you know, you're ugly. I'm just being honest with you, you know, you're ugly. Obviously, there's halachas that dictate how we are to act towards other people. But can you imagine? It wouldn't even be possible to go to work. In most places, how could you even go to work? If everything you're saying is emes, and there's nothing that's not completely true in what you really, really think, and what you really believe, and what you really feel, it's very, very hard. It's very hard. It's very hard for a person like that to get along with people. And the chassidim from Pshisch and Kotsk, as you know, had major problems getting along with other people. And this was, again, not that they were seeking to put down people, but it was the midas amis, no matter what. And that's why we saw stories from when Reb Leib Leger, when we spoke about Reb Leib Leger, when he first came to Kotsk, and how he was tested to see if he's emistic. And emis means that even if 10,000 people disagree with you, even if 10,000 people disagree with you, and when Reb Leib Leger came to Kotsk, so here he was, the famous grandson of Rabbi Kiva Eger, you know. So they wanted to test him. So he had arrived very, very late the night before, and he was exhausted, and the chassidim was supposed to wake him up for davening a certain time. So what did the chassidim do? Chassidim all went, he was sound asleep, the chassidim went to the mikveh, and they went to daven very early, and then they came back, and they took out food, just cake and stuff, and they start eating. And they wake him up. They wake up Reb Leibler, and they say, Leibler, no, let's go, getting ready to wash, we're going to get ready to go daven. And they're sitting there like pressing, you know, like having a whole suda before davening. So Reb Leibler looks around, and he sees that they're like, you know, these are the chassidim from Kotsk, they were like pressing before shachris, and he couldn't believe it, you know. But he didn't say anything. You know, when you're in a place and everybody's doing something, it's very hard, right? It's very hard. And even at Sadiq Ublaibullah, he went to wash Negev Avas, and he said, okay. And then one of the chassidim went and put his arm around him and said, I said, hey, you got a long way to go, Leibler. How come you didn't say anything? How come you're not screaming? How dare we stand over here and eat before davening? So Leibler said, I don't know. I thought maybe, you know, you have a heta, you have this, you have that. So they said, ah, you didn't even step into Kotsk. You didn't even step. Because the emes is, you should be saying, what are you doing? What do you think this is? What are you eating here before Shachar? So of course, we davened before while you were sleeping, but we wanted to see what you were holding. We wanted to test you. And you're still connected to Sheker. You're filled with Sheker. Because a Shachar, you're a Shachar. If you would be truthful, you would have said that this is intolerable and Jews are not allowed to eat before davening. This is only special graces. That was so, we take this to be such a wonderful part of how we are and how we behave. And everybody says only things that make everybody feel good and feel happy. Again, I'm not saying that with the Akoyt Aloch, you're not allowed to hurt people's feelings and be insensitive. But on the other hand, it's a very thin line. It's a very thin line between being a person that's amistic and being a person that's a shakran. And you know how you can tell? When you start doing it, it doesn't even serve any purpose like that. In other words, you first thought of Mushekir by saying, I'm only doing this because I want to be nice. But then you find yourself doing that at other times in life when you don't really need to. And you realize that you're a chakra.
It also means being nemesis to yourself.
That's the most, that's the biggest thing.
You're very careful about mm-hmm. The question you want to have asked you is how does the stress look?
Yeah, no, but there are halachas about that. If your wife asks you, how does the dress look? So there are halachas that say that, even though you might think that it's horrible, you say it's mamish beautiful. You say it's mamish beautiful. There are halachas. That's not called a sheker. that's not called a sheker. That's called emes. You see, that's what one has to learn the halachas to know. There are times when saying something that's not true, like you have a boy that's not doing well in yeshiva, and he says something in class, it's a svar, you know. So you build it up, and you say, ach, it's gevaldik. That's not a sheker. That's the emes of emes. That's the truth of all truths. To be able to get to that child, and to be able to help him, to bring him up. So one has to know when is it permitted. It's a very beginning in halacha, and it's very, very rarely studied. When is it permitted for a person to lie or not? But what Yehuda says is true. What the Rebbe is talking about here is that the beginning is to be true to oneself. And that's why I find it so interesting. I was just having this conversation with somebody today. That people that go to therapy and go to a therapist and they don't feel threatened and they don't feel like, you know, that they're going to get caught or that they're going to be judged because it's a professional relationship and they're paying and they know there's strict laws of confidentiality. So It's amazing how people will be emesdik, be so emesdik. Things that I mean, that's the aside of a good therapist, is to get a person to be honest with himself and to be able to talk about certain things. I was talking to somebody today who was telling me how, you know, that he's been going to therapy and it's unbelievable, like the things that he's been, you know, discovering about himself. So you could ask a kasha, like, why do you have to pay, you know, $125 for, you know, 45 minutes? Why don't you just be emesdik, like, right now? Like, why don't you just say the truth? Like, why do you need to do that? But that's a very simplistic thing, because the emes is that we often need that. We often need that. There are certain things that we know are true inside of us, and we're not confronting. We're trying to run away. We're trying to hide, and we're deluding ourselves. And we'd be uncomfortable to share with somebody. I'm always amazed when I've had students that will come and like, you know, they'll come and pour their hearts out to me, telling me some crazy avera, you know? And I'm always thinking, I never would have gone to talk to any Rebbe about that. You'd have to shoot me first to go talk to someone. And I have such admiration for these people that they'll do that. Or someone will come and tell me, like, you know, that they're having problems in the marriage. You know, it's just like you have to have a certain, there has to be a midas emes to even go ahead and do that, to bear yourself to somebody, especially with someone that you know. And you see in shul, it's one thing if you go to a therapist, you know, you go to the office and you give him a check, and you give him a finish. But if it's somebody that you're going to see, and not only that, more than that, you want that person, as your rabbi, you want that person to look up to you, right? You want to respect you. And to go ahead to say that this is a fault that I have and I need help, I look at these people and I say, this is unbelievable. And the fact that they're already saying that is already half the issue. It's more than half the issue. And it's cheaper than a therapist, right? But it's already a Yeshua. Why? Because once the person is being emesdik, and this is what I think that what a lot of therapy is about, what the Rebbe Buddha is saying, that once a person is being emesdik, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he becomes davuk to Hashem, he becomes more attached to Hashem. And Mimela, Ki'imcha Mekor HaChayim, with Hashem as the source of light, and the more a person is attached to Hashem, the more he sees the truth, even though it's painful initially. But since this person is not lying, he's not deluding himself, he's trying to be honest, and he's trying to work this through, whether it's an issue of marriage, or it's an issue of raising a child, or issue within himself, with certain problems. So by being honest, he's becoming attached to Hashem, and by doing that, he has tremendous yata d'shmai. He has tremendous help. That's in an unnatural way. I see the people that do this, they have very, very big issues.
And the Gorn, the Catholic, they do that thing.
With confession?
Yes.
Yeah.
Does it bring anything?
I mean, does it work? Listen, confession, well, certainly the priest, they did very well.
Yeah.
But, you know, like the one, there's one that says that the priest, he spoke about some horrible avera that he did, the guy. And the priest told him, you're forgiven, that'll be $100. The guy says, I only have 50. He says, do it again, it will be even. Right? So those were called indulgences. And that was a major problem historically. You know, there's definitely something to it. I'm going to tell you something that a lot of people don't realize. That Breslov and Chassidim, until before the war, many were called viduinikas. That they said vidui. Why? Because Rabbi Nachman used to have the Chassidim come and to confess to him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. Rabbi Nachman, you can look at the Maran, that the Indian is going to be misvada to a tzaddik, that Rabbi Nachman urged the Chassidim. After a time, he stopped doing it. But in the beginning, Rabbi Nachman urged the Chassidim to come and to confess the sins to him. And it's not, and there, of course, lahavdil alef alfei havdalos, obviously, that means that if Rabbi Nachman would do, Rabbi Nachman was a Kaddish Elyon. If Rabbi Nachman did such a thing, it means it has a root in holiness. And it has a root in Kiddush, like many of the things in Christianity that were taken from us. They used to, when they would come to the Kohen Gadol, you think it's so, when they would come to the Kohen Gadol, Chazal say, or it's not the Kohen, they'd come to a Kohen, with a carbon to be miskaper, right? So you would come to do smich on the carbon. No?
Because they did the carbon, and they didn't say anything,
Chazal say they confessed to the Kohen. They used to confess to the Kohen.
And the Kohen didn't forgive him. Yeah. The priest forgives them.
Yeah, that's the one I was going to talk about afterwards. Hold it, Shmuel. But they would say their vows to the Kohen.
You have to know which Kohen. Mm-hmm.
They just went with the...
Chazal said these things. No. There's a lot of stories like about that, too. The, that Madapta Rava Halmaisa, with the Gilgal, he remembers when he was a kohen in the Bais HaMikdash, and that this guy came to tell him all of his averus, and then he started to live. It's not such a big deal. And he had to come back again because he made it, because of that, the guy didn't do tshuva. It's a whole story. No, they used to say. So there's definitely a source. The chiluk is that exactly what Shmuel said, that when they would come to the tzaddik, they would come to the kohen, they would come to Rabbi Nachman, so Rabbi Nachman would mamish tear the person's to pieces and put it back together again, and it would show the person how to do tshuva, as opposed to what was happening in the church was that for certain averus you have to pay certain amounts, and then because of what you're giving to the church, or the even though psychologically there's definitely a lot of truth, the confession is a very, very good thing, it's a very healthy thing, but they were forgiven automatically if they follow the rites of the church. But at any rate, it's not a common thing in Yiddishkeit to do that. But you shouldn't think that it's completely from a non-Jewish source. It's not true. We have in our sources as well the inyan of confessing to a tzaddik. I don't want to go into it right now. It's a big inyan. But obviously the purpose of confessing is that there are certain people that their relationship to Hashem is very distant. So for them to say, Al Chet Shechatan Lufanacha, doesn't really shake them up. It doesn't force them to being true to themselves or to Hashem. They just say the words, but they don't really say the truth. But when you have to come to the tzaddik, when you have to come to the Rebbe, and you have to say that, and you say the truth to the tzaddik, so that causes a person to have to really go through a tremendous, tremendous upheaval, and to be a very, very, to be mevatel oneself in such a way is the beginning of returning to Hashem. It's the beginning of return. And we have quite a few stories with the Chayzer from Lublin also, the Meisim like that. You know, and Bechlal by Tzaddikim, that was a very common thing. Even though Rabbi Nachman urged the Chassidim to do it, and he wrote, and we have a Torah from Rabbi Nachman on the subject, but by all the Tzaddikim, they used to...
In the Beis HaMikdash, is what they used to do?
Yeah. Yeah.
Besides the sacrifices?
Sure, yeah.
I thought that was what they did, you know, and they were forgiven.
No, they used to... It wasn't enough. That's why Hashem... If you look in the Nevi'im often criticize people who thought that all they have to do is to pay a couple of dollars, you bring a behemoth, you shech the behemoth, and gandig, and you're forgiven. So Hashem said that this is the ikkar kapara, the ikkar, the main atonement is the result of tshuva. And the kahanim used to talk to them. And they would be misvadali, the person would be misvadi, he would say vidui. And it was part of what was going on in the Beis HaMikdash. But it's not something which is very commonly known, that even in later days that this is something that was a common practice. Just in Breslov it became something which was more of a fixed requirement, but by all the tzaddikim it was something which was commonly done. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Connected all to the fact that the Breslov Hasidim allowed to
his body to this
at night.
Yeah, well, the need of his baridus is to be able to pour your heart out and to talk honestly to Hashem. But there are some people who it's very hard for them to do that initially. It's very, very hard to do that, and it's very therapeutic. It's very therapeutic to articulate one's problems, one's own problems, one's tininess, one's difficulties. It's like, what you talk to a lot of people that have been to therapy. A lot of people have told me that it's not like they heard such Gevalda Gates afterwards. It was by talking about it and by sharing it and by expressing and being truthful with oneself, you could have things, tiniest that a person has against a parent, you know, that are 50, 60, 70 years old. And because they're kept within and they're not, the person doesn't admit it to himself, so that pain is something that during the course of his life has prevented him, has kept him from coming to certain madrigas, to coming to something, to being the person he could be. There are many, many of us just we're afraid to be completely honest with ourselves, because if you're totally honest with yourself, it's too painful. So you prefer to live in a delusion. And, you know, you live in a delusion. You're not honest with yourself about the past. You're honest with yourself about the present. So when the Rebbe Bunim said to the Chassidim, Rosh Hashanah, after Rosh Hashanah, promise me you'll tell the truth, he understood what that meant. It didn't mean you have to come to him to tell the truth. It means be honest. Don't say anything that's not true. And if you be completely amistic, so then you'll come to do tshuva. And Chayes was Kosh Baruch Tshuva, and Hashem will help you, because Hashem loves those who tell the truth.
How do they say Lashana Bavir Shalayim next week?
Every Jew means that. Every Jew means that. Every Jew wants that. Everybody wants that.
What does it mean wants it?
Huh?
What does it mean wants it? Don't get it. I mean, even that, in terms of the emes, like the Rebbe said last week, right. I really love Yerushalayim, we don't be there. Rebbe said it last week.
You know, that's why there are different madrigas and a chanami. If a person, but you see, I have a bigger kasha. I have a bigger kasha. My kasha is, if you really wanted to be a Jew, you'd be a Jew. There are people that their whole kasha is, if you really wanted Yerushalayim, if you really wanted Eretz Yisrael, you'd be an Eretz Yisrael, which I said that myself, and I'm not retracting it. But more important to me is, if you really wanted to be a Yid, you'd be a Yid. And if you were a real Yid, then you'd go to Yerushalayim. If you'd be a real Yid, you'd go to Yerushalayim. But then, on the other hand.
Yid?
Huh?
And otherwise,
you're not a Yid. No, Chas Hashem. Rashi didn't go, and the Ramon didn't go, and the Vilna Gaon didn't go. That doesn't mean that. The Vilna Gaon wanted to go. What it means is that every single Jew, in the depths of who he or she is, wants to and really believes that that's the only place where we could truly, truly, completely, and fully serve Hashem. Right? We know that. Even if it wouldn't be anything else other than the fact that there are many mitzvahs that we can't observe in Chutz Lars. Even for that alone, we know that in our heart of hearts. But if you would tell me, it's a very general statement. If someone has an elderly parent that he's taking care of in Chutz Lars who's not able to go to Eretz Yisrael, it would be the biggest sheker for him to leave an elder. Are you going to leave an old parent by himself? You can't. So, and that would be, it would be against halacha to do such a thing. That was the meaning of it. There are halachic priorities. But I think what Shmuel and I are talking about is that the rutzen to be in Eretz Yisrael and the rutzen to be in Yerushalayim and Bisamik, it's the panemius of each and every one of us. So how come we're not all going? So there are ikuvim, there are obstacles, some of them are real and some of them are make-believe. Right? Huh?
Not being truthful.
Well, you have to be, you know, if a person would really, many of us are, it's true, many of us are just deluding ourselves. Many of us delude. Could we, you know, that on the other hand, I'll tell you something else. I see many people that if that individual would be in Eretz Yisrael, he wouldn't be able to be Maitzis Koyches Alapoyal as he is in Chutz Laretz. I see this. There are certain people that they're like, guy that's a fantastic fifth grade Rebbe in New York, and he's a fantastic way with the kids. And in Eretz Yisrael, for a person like that, and he doesn't know Hebrew, And he's mamish bringing kids, getting kids excited about Shabbos, about mitzvahs. So, it's certainly not pleasant to say that person should leave. Would you say that, Shmuel? That individual who has a tremendous talent with children, and he doesn't speak Hebrew, sparks with American kids, he understands an American kid, he's got the finger on the pulse of an American kid. So. He should go to Eretz Yisrael too?
Should have a moon in the Kaddish Baruch Hu, that just like the Kaddish Baruch Hu gave him that koach to be successful as a fifth grade Rebbe in a school in Long Island. I should have given him a hot slap and give him a fifth grade Rebbe in Zaybrak.
It's a very big...
Hashem can't help that same Rebbe in Yerushalayim. Mm-hmm. Only in a lot of it.
And the boys are attached to him. The boys are attached to him. They have a chias from him.
What better way to attach it to set an example?
But the children, they're in fifth grade, they're not, their parents, they're not, they don't have a bechira to go to Eretz Yisrael right now. And they have a chias from this Rebbe. Don't they have a chias from him? They love him. He's mechazik them. He's mechay them. Jews can't be abandoned if they're Jews. They're not chas v'shalom to leave Jews behind. Why didn't we see that through all the dervs? Why wasn't it? Why don't you say the chasam soif had big enough a moon? He could have been the chasam soif in Eretz Yisrael. It's not possible to say such a thing. Chassam Sofer, his amunah, were not worthy of him spitting on us. His amunah, Elamai, the tzaddikim understood that there are other yidden that Hashem made a shluchim to be matapul. Why can't this fifth grade rabbi say that Hashem has made me shluch to take care of his children who are stuck over here? Why not? Why is his tachlis in life dafka that he has to break his teeth to try to talk to somebody in Bnei Brak? If he has a shprach with the kids, he could talk to the kids. These Jews are here right now. Why can't he say that Hashem has made me shlich to take care of his children in Chutz Lars?
He's here right now because he's here right now. There's no end. There's no end. There's no end.
I don't think you have to go to the pilpul. I think that a person, look, obviously one has to speak to the tzaddik. I didn't mean to get this. It's interesting. It's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
What's the amis? It's interesting. What's the amis? That the inyan of Yishev Eretz Yisrael and is not the highest priority in Yiddishkeit. And that's for that, and when that becomes the highest priority, one has to be very, very careful. One's entering into the twilight zone of kfira. And that's not the highest priority. The highest priority of Yiddishkeit is Yiddishkeit. And there are 613 mitzvahs, and one of the mitzvahs, but if you have little boys that are attached to you and you're teaching them Torah, so to make the pool and the cheshbonis about Eretz Yisrael, I think it's not. It's just a distortion of halacha. Halacha says that there's a higher priority. You just write it right here. This kid, I'm a chazak him. He's keeping Shabbos. He's keeping mitzvahs. Right. That I don't have to go into the whole thing to think. But what kind of an example am I? We just say that that's the biggest thing that he has to move to Israel right now. It doesn't say that he has to keep Shabbos right now. He has to keep Shabbos. He has to do the best he can as a Jew right now. That's
what about the river of Nachman?
Yeah.
He left his wife and he wasn't in the city.
He came back right away. He didn't stay. Yeah, Ibn Nachman didn't stay. Right.
Where's the end there?
Let me tell you something. There are certain Jews whose neshamas, like Shmuel, like a friend Shmuel Hid, whose neshamas are very, very much connected to Eretz Yisrael, that it's hard to envision how could I be a Jew without Eretz Yisrael. And there are certain big neshamas that have a special connection. That, like I have, there's another neshama who's connected to Tzitzis. There are other neshamas connected to Shabbos. And this person, and each person has the sherish, the root of his neshama, is very much connected to us, even though it's to all Torah. But it could be very, very profoundly connected to one inyan. And it's hard to know. Then Rabbi Nachum said about himself that he was an Eretz Yisrael Dikiyid. He said that about himself on many occasions. And we saw that Rav Kook. You see that there are Jews in Eretz Yisrael that they can't leave Eretz Yisrael. There are other Rosh Hashivas that they seem to be here more than they are in usual life. Like, you know, every 2 weeks they're visiting, whatever, this or that. There are other tzaddikim, Rabbi Yashiv, you'll never catch him in Chutz Laretz. If he would come here, if Rabbi Yashiv would come here, he would get the whole Torah world would come to kiss his feet. No, it's pretty. So the covet factor is very high over there. Rabbi Yashiv never left, never, ever.
The mother is the cousin who revived.
You can't understand such a thing. Why? Because he felt that his very life is dependent upon it. He felt that everything is completely dependent upon Eretz Yisrael and his being there. So, and there are other Jews. The Yismach Moshe was desperate to go to Eretz Yisrael. And in the end, he didn't go. And in those days, it's not like now, you just get on the airplane. He was desperate to go because he couldn't give up Yontif Sheni Shel Galuyos. He couldn't give up Yontif Sheni Shel Galuyos. No.
Second Seder?
No. That's the second Yontif, the Yontif Sheni Shel Galuyos is the most amazing thing. The second Seder is on a higher Madrega than the first Seder. Nechsidus. It's on a higher Madrega. Says in the Svar Makadosh, Torah Shabbat Peh. What's greater, Torah Shabbat Chsav, Torah Shabbat Peh? So Hashem says, Ki Tayyim Dodechem Yayin. When a Jew gives of himself for Kadosh Baruch Hu, Yismach Moshe couldn't give up Yontif Sheni Shel Galuyos. He said, the Kedusha is too great. He couldn't part with Yontif Sheni Shel Galuyos. And he loved Eretz Yisrael more than me, Yushmul. But he couldn't give it up. He couldn't give up Yontif Sheni Shel Galuyos. He couldn't give it up. And we don't, they're not Masik. These are big people. So he was connected to the light of Yontif Sheni Shel Galuyos. What we could do is to respect other Jews as long as it's halacha. Right? Then we respect that. If someone says that the sharish of my neshama is to eat chazan, you know, that's not possible.
No, but the point is that the emes is different to one person as opposed to somebody else.
As long as it's not against Shulchan Aruch. Like Rabbi Nachman the Breslov, you could say anything you want in my name as long as it's not against Shulchan Aruch. But you could say it even not in my name. You could quote me. You could misquote me. As long as it's not against Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch, that's why I always have to be careful with these lashonis that it should be with Shulchan Aruch, not Chas V'Chalil, not in Shulchan Aruch. And we always have to be, with all the passion and with all the love that we have for this mitzvah, that, it has to always be within Shulchan Aruch. Sorry, were you going to say even?
Division,
it's there?
Yeah, he wanted to have the second Seder Pesach, so he's looking for a sacrifice.
They should be able to have the second. Yeah, because by people like us, the second Seder is like, oh my God, I can't believe it. It's like a drag, you know? Here we go again, the Seder of Abrakaisis, because the whole time is the first. That's because we're mamish not Avdei Hashem, we're not God's servants. The second Seder is the most unbelievable Seder. The Chayzer from Lublin, I'm sorry I went off the topic tonight. The Chayzer had a chosid, Reb Shmuel Karo was a Chamardic man, she was a big Jew. So this chosid was unbelievably poor, but he was too, you know, he didn't want to tell people, he didn't have really anything for the Seder. Food or what, you know, he's so poor. The Chayzer, why they call him the Chayzer? Because he had good eyes, right? So the Chayzer sent along a whole wagon. You know, he sent along food for his, even though he didn't tell anybody about Shmuel. But the Chayzer knew, with his Ruach HaKadosh, he sent along food for Yantiv to go, it was in a different town, not so far. He sent it over to Reb Shmuel. So can you imagine, before Yantiv came a gift from the Chayzer from Lublin, everything, the wine, meat, matzahs, fish, everything, a whole Pesach. So Shmuel didn't have children, just him and his wife. So it was such a Seder they had, and had the most unbelievable Seder. That first night was so gewaldig. And they were talking and singing and everything was fantastic. And they stayed up the whole night. Because these were people who never had food. So what happened was that the second Seder, they came to find for Kaddish or Chas, but they were so exhausted, they were up the whole night. So they sat just for 2 minutes before Kiddush. They just said he had to put his head down. So they both fell asleep, and there was no one else there. And he woke up, it was like 10 minutes before the Zman, for Afikomen. It was 10 minutes before the Zman, for the Matzahs. 10 minutes. So he went crazy. Kaddish, Ruach, they had to do everything like that. And here's a tzaddik. Normally when he did the first, everything was with the Arizal, you know, all the Kabbalah and all the names of Hashem, everything he did. And here he did it like mamash stuffed in this, the four kaisers, could barely even say, you know, that was it. Forget about the Echem Yedeya. He couldn't believe how could such a thing have happened to him. His whole life it never happened to such a thing. He was always preparing, he was always on. And here he had such a gift from the Rebbe, and he didn't. Anyway, so he couldn't go on. So he decided, Chol HaMoed, he's going to go with the Tzaddik. So he went to Lublin, Chol HaMoed, and he came to the Chayzer. He didn't have to say anything. When he walked in, the Chayzer looked up, he said, ah, Shmuel, this year you had Pesach, you had two star. He said, the first Seder was okay, but the second Seder was Mardik. The second Seder was, so Shmuel says, Rebbe, I think, the other way, the first Seder was Gevaldik. The second Seder, Rebbe started to cry. He said, no, I know what I'm saying. The first Seder you were up till the sun came up. Right? I know. And the second Seder you fell asleep and you made 10 minutes the whole Haggadah. But you should know that the second Seder was Mardik. That's what he said. Now, what does that mean? What does that mean? The second Seder, our Seder is more chashuv. No, you know why? Because the second Seder, what the Chayzer was saying was, with a broken heart, and completely, that he stuffed him, and it was just an Eved Hashem. He didn't take one thing for himself. It was purely for God. It was the most godly thing in the world. What you and I think sometimes is the most godly thing, is Lav Davka. It's good. It was good. The first Seder was nice. But the second Seder. So you have sometimes a person that they're in a place where they really can't keep mitzvahs properly and there's so much pressure and they're at work and they're trying to be good or they're in a non-religious environment at home. And then later on they come to a place where it's Mamish Mechai. So when they come in the 120th, so the Baruch Shalom might say, the first part of your life was Gevaldik. The second part, not bad. He said, Hashem, I think maybe you have it wrong. The first part when I wasn't in a religious home and I was trying to do, you know, in the office, trying to just make a broken heart. I know exactly what I'm talking about. The second part was nice and you did, but the first part was murder. Because when a Jew does something without even getting any spirituality in return, just purely to serve the master of the world, we don't know how to measure such a thing. We don't know how to measure. Therefore, our job is to be Avdei Hashem. Not just what I feel like, but to be Avdei Hashem. Avdei Hashem. All right, I'm sorry. We'll continue with Hashem next week. Good. Is there a